Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Monday, November 16th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier is predicting a sunny to partly cloudy day today, with winds from the west at 10 to 20 miles per hour, a high of 52 degrees, and a low of 25 tonight. Looking around the region, sunny to partly cloudy today, breezy in the afternoon, clear tonight, sunny to partly cloudy tomorrow. Wednesday, mostly sunny and windy. Thursday, milder with clouds and sun. Friday, mostly cloudy and mild. The lead stories on the front page today are Bricks for Birds, Poll Workers Contract Virus, and we begin with Hoover Goes Viral. Waterloo officials battle increasing staffing shortages. Hoover Middle School moves to online learning for the next week. Filed by Andrew Wind. And the story begins with a photograph of Jane Lindemann, the superintendent of Waterloo Community Schools. Waterloo. Hoover Middle School students are moving to virtual instruction for the next week as officials deal with higher staffing shortages due to COVID-19 than at other district buildings. Quote, "This decision will provide flexibility among our staff so that we can continue instruction for Hoover students," Waterloo Community School Superintendent Jane Lindemann told the Courier on Sunday. Hoover is the only district school that has gone to completely online learning. The staff shortages relate to people testing positive for the coronavirus and others quarantining after potential exposure. Quote, "There are other absences for other reasons, but the current staff shortage came about by staffing needing to isolate or quarantine," said Lindemann. The percentage of Hoover's 98 staff members who were absent hovered between 20% and 30% during the past week. Earlier in the week, she noted it was mostly support staff such as paraeducators, custodians, and kitchen workers, but that had shifted to core classroom teachers by Friday. Quote, "We are kind of maybe hanging by a thread to make it work," said Lindemann. "In order to allow staff to recover, we knew we needed to move to virtual. A broader, coordinated approach to temporary online learning may be coming in the next week," the superintendent hinted. "We are working with leaders all across the county, not only school, but city leaders," said Lindemann. Hoover parents were informed on Friday of the change at their school. It follows a week during which the building was in a more restrictive phase of mitigation as cases grew, she said. Sports were canceled, and cleaning of the building was scaled up as staff and family were asked to be more cautious about the possibility of exposures. Required virtual instruction begins Monday at 7:45 a.m., the same time students would normally start classes in the building. 9 half-hour periods with 5-minute breaks, the same order as in-person classes, run through 12:50 p.m. each day. Quote, "The current teachers will work together to do a combination of online teaching and offline lessons and assignments," said Lindemann. "For the most part, live online instruction will take place during the scheduled morning and early afternoon times. Afternoons will be used for students' offline assignments and teacher planning time. It won't always be a student's assigned teacher providing the online instruction due to the shortages," she noted. Parents have told Lindemann that some teachers send out assignments to students through their school accounts during the weekend to prepare for the switch to online learning. Students and parents can contact school staff and administration or the district with questions. Hoover's number is area code 319-433-2830. Poll Workers Contract Virus, but Election Day Link Unclear. Filed by the Associated Press. And opens with a photograph with the caption, "Johnson County Precinct Election Officials Check Voters In Before They Cast Their Ballot on Election Day at Carver Hawkeye Arena on the University of Iowa campus in Iowa City." And you see long tables with yellow barricades and signs hanging from the ceiling indicating alphabet letters for registration. Despite painstaking efforts to keep election sites safe, some poll workers who came in contact with voters on Election Day have tested positive for the coronavirus including more than 24 in Missouri and others in Iowa, New York, Indiana, and Virginia. In Cedar Rapids, which is a county considered a national virus hotspot, an election official who worked an early voting site later tested positive. Quote, "I'm actually surprised that we don't have more cases," said Linn County Election Commissioner Joel Miller, who noted that several county workers in his building tested positive in the last week. Quote, "It actually seems kind of far-fetched that we didn't have more, but they might not be reporting it to us," unquote. The infections cannot be tied definitively to polling places. Because COVID-19 is spreading rapidly in the U.S., there is no way to determine yet whether in-person voting on Election Day contributed to the surge, public health experts said. Still, the infections among poll workers raise concerns because of how many people passed through voting sites, which implemented social distancing rules, erected positive barriers, and stocked sanitizer, masks, gloves, and other safety gear. In most places, poll workers were required to wear masks. The cases emerged while election workers continued counting thousands of ballots. As a hand tally of the presidential race began in Georgia, the state's top election official placed himself under quarantine after his wife tested positive for the coronavirus. Election officials in Jackson County, Missouri, which includes Kansas City, seem to be the hardest hit so far, with about 28 staffers testing positive in the past couple of weeks. Tammy Brown, head of the Jackson County Election Board, said her staffers urged voters who felt ill to avoid coming inside, though she suspects not everyone listened. The board dealt with nearly 200,000 voters, including more than 60,000 who cast early ballots. Quote, "We, as election officials, all knew we were at risk," Brown said. Quote, "I don't think this was shocking to any of us." With transmission rates high in Missouri, health officials were not ready to link the cases to polling places. They say the workers could have been infected anywhere. The county offered drive-through voting for people with COVID-19 or who were quarantining because of contact with someone who was infected. When part-time workers became ill, full-time election board staff worked the drive-through lane. It's difficult to trace cases back to polling places because the virus manifests in different ways and some people never get symptoms. Infections also are spiking as people gather with extended family or friends and return to more crowded public settings. The U.S. on Sunday surpassed 11 million confirmed COVID-19 cases, with the most recent million coming in less than a week, according to Johns Hopkins University. The virus has now killed more than 246,000 people in the United States, and the disease is spreading faster across the country than at any time since the pandemic started. While that spread increases the likelihood poll workers may have contacted the disease elsewhere, there have been calls for their co-workers to quarantine and voters to be tested as a precaution. In New York, more than 1,600 people who voted at a site in Hudson Valley on Election Day have been advised to get tested after a poll worker tested positive. Officials said colleagues who had sustained contact with the worker will be tested, but they described the risk to voters as minimal because the person wore a mask, kept distance, and followed other safety measures. Similarly, officials in Virginia's Carroll County said two poll workers in different precincts have tested positive. A health official said that because both were in their infectious periods on Election Day, testing has been offered to workers and voters. Virginia officials statewide had masks, face shields, gloves, hand sanitizer, and other supplies for polling places, and they trained people in safety practices, said Jessica Bauman, deputy commissioner of the Virginia Department of Elections. It could be several weeks before the effect of in-person voting nationwide is known. Polling places that used safety measures could have greatly minimized transmission rates, perhaps making them less risky than going to a restaurant with friends, said M. Kumi Smith, an assistant professor with the Epidemiology Division at the University of Minnesota. Quote, "A super spreader event is a lot easier to identify when you're still at an early stage of an epidemic or when there's a really discrete event That's really unlike anything else that everyone else is doing, she said. But given the real range of activities that are going on here, I would probably be a little more skeptical of someone who declares that this is definitely a super-spreading event, unquote. No major reports of safety lapses or risky voting conditions have emerged. States had varying rules for masks, but even in places with mandates, officials balked at requiring face coverings while voting. Instead, they opted for a strong recommendation or offered options such as curbside voting or booths away from others. In Indiana, a poll worker who later tested positive did not show symptoms, practiced social distancing, and wore a mask at all times on Election Day, said Bartholomew County Clerk Jay Phelps. As a precaution, seven colleagues are quarantining for 2 weeks. He said election officials spent a lot of time and money making polling places as safe as possible. Poll workers wore masks, and machines, tables, and doorknobs were constantly sanitized. Quote, we worked really hard to make sure that every polling location had protocols in place, Phelps said. Bricks for Birds campaigned to raise funds for Hartman Reserve Bird and Pollinator Garden. Story filed by Melody Parker. Cedar Falls. Nearly stripped of colorful fall leaves, tree branches shiver against the wind on a chilly fall afternoon at Hartman Reserve Nature Center. A downy woodpecker flies in for an energy boost at a suet feeder. And we see a photograph of that downy woodpecker at a suet feeder, and it's a green cage-like structure filled about one-third full of suet. He's not alone. There are enough bird and suet feeders up to keep lines moving when resident and migratory birds fly in for a seed meal or a snack to go, especially since Mother Nature has slapped a, quote, closed for the season sign on the insect buffet. Next year, human visitors will be able to walk around a meandering brick walkway and birdwatch through the newly renovated bird feeding and pollinator garden on the west side of the Nature Center. Meanwhile, the Bricks for Birds campaign is in full flight. The public can purchase custom engraved bricks now for the ADA accessible walkway to be built in spring 2021. Funds raised will directly support feeding the birds and any maintenance required, said Katie Kluss, a Hartman Reserve naturalist. Quote, purchasing a brick is an excellent way to commemorate a family member, and it can be a great gift for the holidays, especially for people who spend time outdoors and value it. It's a great way to contribute and maintain this area for wildlife, she said. Bricks are available in 4x8-inch and 8x8-inch sizes. There are several prices based on the selected size, and whether engraving is simply script, such as a family name, or also includes a graphic, such as a heart or a bird silhouette. The campaign will continue until we run out of bricks. We wanted to kick off the campaign now and have stacks of bricks engraved and ready to install this spring, Kluss said. Accessible to wheelchairs, the path will begin at an existing sidewalk and wind through the area where a deck was demolished when the Nature Center underwent remodeling several years ago. Native plant species, such as berry-producing serviceberry shrubs, will surround the walkway and support wildlife and hundreds of pollinator species, including butterflies and moths and caterpillars, bees, beetles, and other insects. The birding and garden area will become a teaching tool to show homeowners how to develop an urban landscape for native wildlife. An interpretive plan will offer activities and demonstrations for both children and adults. Hartman Reserve is recognized by the National Audubon Society as an important bird area, with more than 150 bird species recorded through Cornell Lab of Ornithology's eBird Citizen Science Initiative. Quote, people are surprised at the variety of birds that come through Hartman Reserve. We have the pileated woodpecker, which is the size of a crow with a big red mohawk on top, and a variety of migratory and rare birds like the tiny warbler species, Kluss explained. As winter ends, the life cycle begins anew. Visitors can get a close-up view of birds raising their young through the live nest cams. And we have here a photograph of a viewing room with a bench inside going along three walls, including screens. The caption says, "Screens displaying different species of birds help watchers identify birds. Bricks for Birds campaign will build a walkway through a newly renovated bird feeding and pollinators area behind Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls." For information on purchasing bricks for the walkway, go to www.hartmanreserve.org/bricks-for-birds.html or call Gretchen at 277-2187. Turning now to the Cedar Valley page, let's read the Metro Briefs column. Mercy One gets mask donation, Waterloo. Mercy One Waterloo Foundation has received more than $6,800 for COVID-19 relief efforts from the Waterloo Community Foundation's First Responders Fund. The funds will be used to provide surgical masks for patients, families, visitors, colleagues, and providers at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center. Public and private donations and proceeds from t-shirt and watercolor prints by Waterloo artist Michael Brochar depicting first responders generated the funds for this gift. Mayor assists East Basketball, Waterloo. Mayor Quentin Hart is challenging the community and East High alumni to assist the East High School Boys basketball program with a fundraiser for travel sweatsuits. Mayor Hart kicked off the donations through his Believe Waterloo Foundation. The challenge to make a donation will end Friday. Donations may be made in amounts of $10, $20, $50, or $100 to match or beat the mayor's donation. Donations may be made at www.wloocommunityfoundation.org or mailed to East Waterloo Boys Basketball Program, 214 High Street, Waterloo, 50703. For more information, contact Coach Brent Carmichael at carmichaelb@waterlooschools.org or at this phone number, 433-2400. Bucks Seeking Military Heroes, Waterloo. The Waterloo Bucks are seeking nominations for their 7th Annual Military Heroes Class. The ceremony for the 2021 Military Heroes Class will be at Cost Cutters Field in Riverfront Stadium before a game or around Independence Day based on the upcoming release of the 2021 Northwoods League schedule. Military heroes will be honored on the field, highlighted on the Bucks LED Live video board, and will receive 4 game tickets. Nominations will be taken until January 31st or until there are 20 submissions at www.waterloobucks.com. For more information, call Dan Corbin at this phone number, 232-0500, or email corbin@waterloobucks.com. Viridian hosts giving campaign, Waterloo. Viridian Credit Union is accepting voters for nonprofit organizations across Iowa to receive $34,000 on Giving Tuesday, December 1st. Votes are accepted daily for Viridian's annual Spark the Spirit giving campaign through Thanksgiving Day at viridiancu.org/sparkthespirit. The group vote-getting organization in each region will receive $5,000. Second and third places will receive $2,500 and $1,000, respectively. 8 organizations in the Cedar Valley are accepting votes for Spark the Spirit, including Otter Creek Animal Shelter, Cedar Bend Humane Society, Cedar Valley Friends of the Family, Family and Children's Council of Black Hawk County, House of Hope, Mustangs Foundation, Northeast Iowa Food Bank, and Salvation Army. Voting and details are available at viridiancu.org/sparkthespirit. Waverly office closed for holiday. Waverly, City offices will be closed November 26th through 27th for the Thanksgiving holiday. There will be no garbage picked up on those days. Thursday's garbage will be picked up on Wednesday, November 25th, and Friday's garbage will be picked up on Monday, November 30th. The recycling center will be open on Saturday, November 28th. For more information, call this phone number, 352-6247 or 352-9065. In the public safety roundup, Waterloo man slams into garage, Waterloo. A man lost control of his SUV in a Waterloo alley Friday night, hitting another man's garage and causing $5,000 in damage, according to police records. The man allegedly hit the garage, 331 Hammond Avenue, with the front of his gray 1999 Chevrolet Tahoe. The incident happened around 10:30 p.m. Friday. The car hit the front corner of the garage, causing the building to shift off its foundation. No one reported injuries. Police said the 39-year-old driver, Corey Monroe, initially drove away from the scene. Monroe's car was found at his residence, two houses away from the garage. The car was registered to his grandmother, though police said Monroe is the known driver of the SUV. Police found the car with about $1,500 in damage and cut out airbags. There were swerving tire marks in the gravel from the garage to Monroe's address, police records show. Monroe later went to the garage owner's house to admit that he hit the building with his car. Monroe said he was doing work on his SUV before hitting the garage. When he test drove it, he said the throttle body stuck open and the car sped out of control, according to police. Citations are pending for the incident. Police records show Waterloo police did not immediately provide more information. Woman arrested for alleged assault, Waterloo. Waterloo police arrested a 24-year-old woman Saturday for an alleged November 1st assault on one of her acquaintances, records show. The woman, city resident Jonah Goad, was arrested on a pending charge of misdemeanor assault. She allegedly assaulted another woman, 22, at the woman's house on the 2200 block of LaPorte Road. The incident happened shortly after 10 p.m. on November 1st, according to police records. Police said the alleged assault was reported by the victim. Goad did not remain in Black Hawk County Jail as of Sunday, according to online records. She was previously convicted of fifth-degree theft for a December 2019 incident, court records show. Cedar Falls crews respond to dumpster fire. Cedar Falls. A dumpster caught on fire near the Martin Brothers Distribution Center, 406 Viking Road, around 1 p.m. on Sunday. Fire officials told dispatchers there was smoke leaving the enclosed dumpster when they arrived on scene. Cedar Falls officials said they could not immediately provide more information. Two cars collide on Waterloo Road, Cedar Falls. A two-vehicle crash shut down part of eastbound Waterloo Road on Sunday around 6:40 p.m., according to dispatchers. The crash happened at the intersection of Waterloo Road and East 18th Street in Cedar Falls, according to officials. Officials told dispatchers there were minor injuries. The incident involved a red sedan and a black pickup truck, according to dispatchers. Both cars will be towed due to damage, dispatchers said. Cedar Falls fire rescue officials did not provide more information Sunday. Evansdale still undecided on sewer treatment plan, filed by Kristen Guess. Evansdale. The contentious decision on how the city will deal with its outdated sewage plant is still up in the air, but officials are looking closer at the possibility of joining Waterloo's operation. Evansdale Mayor Troy Beatty said officials recently announced an estimated cost of $8.4 million if Evansdale were to send its waste to Waterloo for treatment and disposal. The city's other options include making improvements to the current plant at 1212 River Forest Road, which is estimated at $10.9 million, or building a new site in Evansdale, estimated at more than $14 million. The existing plant at 1212 River Forest Road is in the flood plan and was unable to meet disinfection and nutrient reduction standards. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources gave the city until November 1, 2023, to either replace its existing plant or find other alternatives. Waterloo officials have been eyeing a potential regionalized plant with neighboring towns. Waterloo's plant on Easton Avenue is facing about $100 million in required upgrades in coming years. Quote, "I am open to whatever operation works best for the city. If the area does regionalize wastewater, then it makes sense for us to get a head start and become a customer of Waterloo before a board is formed," Beatty said. Quote, "They understand that Evansdale will make the best decision for them and will have a great partnership to work with." Earlier this month, McClure Engineering, the firm hired to provide options for Evansdale looming disinfection deadline, sent a progress update to the Iowa DNR stating officials have been working through concerns that a regionalized treatment system could be implemented before Evansdale's 2023 deadline. Last year, the Evansdale City Council voted 3-2 to build a sewage treatment plant at Highway 20 and River Forest Road. Many in the community were unhappy with the decision, which would have required a significant increase in sewer fees. Beatty also noted the site would take away the disc golf course. Quote, "I personally do not want to build a new treatment facility off the highway and road into town for people to look at on a regular basis," he said. Mary and Bright, local teacher named official artist for 32nd annual holiday event, filed by Melody Parker. And it begins with a photograph of artist Jody Victoria. Cedar Falls. Artist Jody Victoria revisited memories of childhood Christmases for her painting as the official artist for the 32nd annual Festival of Trees, Merry and Bright, November 18 through 22nd. Quote, "I thought about those words, Merry and Bright, and began thinking about things that make me happy. Being a mom has always made me feel fulfilled and happy, and so I came up with a doe and her baby and the happiness of that image." And here the article includes a picture of her painting, which has a mother deer and her doe in front of Santa Claus, and he's holding some Christmas lights. Victoria has two daughters, Jordan and Bailey. Victoria's charming woodland creatures are joined with a retro-looking Santa holding a strand of colorful Christmas lights. "I wanted to incorporate the lights to symbolize hope that we can come together and have a better 2021, she explained. The original acrylic on-canvas painting will be displayed in the Gallery of Trees at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center on University of Northern Iowa campus. Bids will be accepted at the online auction at www.mercyone.org/festivaloftrees. The gallery will be open to the public from noon to 6 p.m. November 18, November 19, and November 20th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. November 21st, and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. November 22nd. Appropriate COVID-19 safety precautions are in place, including the remainder of the scaled-back event will feature online activities. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Monday, November 16th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Turning the page to national news, we have Trump acknowledges Biden win. President refuses to concede, says election was rigged against him. Stories filed by Kevin Freaking, Associated Press, Washington. President Donald Trump on Sunday appeared to acknowledge for the first time that Joe Biden won the White House, but made clear he would not concede and would keep trying to overturn the election result. Trump's statements came in tweets that included several baseless claims about the November 3rd vote, which state and federal officials say was safe and secure. Without using Biden's name, Trump tweeted that, quote, "he won," something Trump had not said before publicly, though he said the Democrats' victory was only in the eyes of the media. Biden defeated Trump by winning back a trio of Midwestern battleground states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, and topped the 270 electoral vote threshold to cinch the presidency. Biden, so far, has 78.8 million votes, the most ever by a winning candidate, to Trump's roughly 73 million. Quote, if the president's prepared to begin to recognize that reality, that's positive, Biden's incoming chief of staff, Ron Klain, told NBC's Meet the Press. Still, Klain said, Donald Trump's Twitter feed doesn't make Joe Biden president or not president. The American people did that. A Republican governor said, quote, it was good, actually, to see Trump's tweet that Biden won. Quote, I think that's the start of an acknowledgement. We want to make sure that there is a smooth transition, said Arkansas Asa Hutchinson on NBC. The president has previously refused to accept the results of the election, and in a later tweet Sunday, he dug in again, saying that I concede nothing. We have a long way to go. Even while seemingly acknowledging Biden's victory, he also argued without evidence that the former vice president won because the election was rigged. Trump then made unsubstantiated complaints about access for poll watchers and about vote tabulations and asserted, we will win. Twitter soon posted warning labels about the tweets. There has been no widespread fraud in the 2020 election. In fact, election officials from both political parties have stated publicly that the election went well, and international observers confirmed that there were no serious irregularities. Trump's campaign has tried to mount legal challenges across the country, but many of the lawsuits have been thrown out, and none has included any evidence that the outcome might be reversed. Nearly 2 weeks after Election Day, Trump has neither called Biden nor made a formal concession, and White House officials have insisted that they are preparing for a second term. In recent days, Trump appeared to be inching closer to acknowledging the reality of his loss. In comments Friday in the Rose Garden about a coronavirus vaccine, Trump said his administration would, quote, not be going to a lockdown, unquote, to slow the spread of COVID-19, and added that, quote, whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be, I guess time will tell, unquote. Trump, on Sunday, renewed his groundless attacks on an election technology firm, Dominion Voting Systems, without evidence of serious irregularities. Dominion has said it, quote, denies claims about any vote switching or alleged software issues with our voting systems, unquote. This page also includes a photograph of the SpaceX launch yesterday, and we see the rocket ship blasting off with a bright white light of the liquid oxygen fuel being burned, and we see billowous white clouds of smoke below. And the caption says, SpaceX sends 4 astronauts to International Space Station. A SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket with the Crew Dragon capsule attached lifts off from Kennedy Space Center on Sunday in Cape Canaveral, Florida. The 4 astronauts aboard, 3 Americans and 1 Japanese, are beginning a mission to the International Space Station. They were due to arrive late Monday and remain there until spring. The launch marked the first full-fledged taxi flight for NASA by a private company. On the editorial page, we have, no question, we should all wear masks. To mandate or not to mandate face masks, that really shouldn't be the question, filed by Aaron Murphy. With COVID-19 raging through Iowa at a disturbing pace never before seen during the pandemic, the debate over mask wearing, and more specifically, whether face masks should be required by government, has reignited. That debate should be unnecessary, as should any proposed need for intervention from our elected officials. Based on the scientifically supported advice from nearly all public health and infectious disease experts, everyone should be wearing face masks in public, especially when people cannot maintain at least 6 feet of distance between themselves and others. If everyone did his or her part by taking these simple and effective steps, there would be no need to debate whether governments should require such actions. Governor Kim Reynolds and other elected officials would not be subject to constant questions about whether they plan to implement a face mask mandate. But face masks are most effective when everyone is doing his or her part. The more people who don't socially distance and don't wear masks, the more virus is able to spread from person to person. Clearly, not enough Iowans are heeding that advice from public health and infectious disease experts. The state has the fourth highest rate of spread in the country, according to the latest report from the White House. The statewide two-week average positivity rate is a remarkably dangerous 22.7%, and COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in Iowa are all at record highs. Hospitalizations are increasing so rapidly that hospital officials are sounding warnings of running out of beds and healthcare staff. They are begging the public for help, pleading with Iowans to wear face masks in public. Throughout the pandemic, Reynolds has said she does not believe a face mask mandate is necessary, that Iowans will do the right thing, even as the evidence mounts to show otherwise. Last week, Reynolds instituted some requirements for face masks, but only for social gatherings of 25 or more people. The requirement does not apply to businesses. Reynolds has argued face mask mandates are not silver bullets that will stop the virus's spread. And to a point, that is true. Iowa's next-door neighbor of Wisconsin is proof. That state's governor instituted a face mask mandate, and the virus has been spreading rapidly there, too. But Wisconsin is also further proof that the buy-in for mask mandate must be complete from top to bottom, from elected officials to citizens going about their day-to-day business. And when that buy-in is not complete, the virus will continue to spread. The messaging from elected leaders in Wisconsin has been inconsistent, too. Democratic Governor Tony Evers issued the mask-wearing mandate, but majority Republicans in the state legislature there have taken the governor to court over the mandate. That divided leadership presents an opening for citizens to choose a path that aligns with their personal beliefs, even if those beliefs do not align with the widespread expert advice on how to manage the pandemic. So you wind up with some people who wear masks in public and others who don't. That is not a recipe for success. Public health and infectious disease experts are in near unanimous agreement on this. We need the same from our elected officials if we are to get through this pandemic anytime soon. Do we need a mask mandate in Iowa? The bottom line is, we shouldn't have to even ask the question. Turning to the sports page, we'll begin with the story about the Masters competition. One-of-a-kind performance. The story is filed by Doug Ferguson of the Associated Press and begins with the photograph of Tiger Woods in a green blazer and placing a green blazer on the winner, Dustin Johnson, after his victory at the Masters golf tournament on Sunday. Augusta, Georgia. Nothing ever comes easily for Dustin Johnson in the majors, except for when he slipped his arms through that Masters green jacket Sunday. Johnson overcame a jittery start that conjured memories of past majors he failed to finish off. He turned that into a command performance, making sure this one-of-a-kind Masters with no fans also had no drama. Johnson tapped in for par on the 18th for a 4-under 68 to finish 20-under 268, breaking by two shots the record set by Tiger Woods in 1997 and matched by Jordan Spieth in 2015. His five-shot victory was the largest at the Masters since Woods won by 12 in 1997. All that was missing were the roars from a crowd for any of his pivotal putts early and his birdie putts on the back nine that put it away. Quote, "It still feels like a dream," Johnson said. "As a kid, you're dreaming about winning the Masters, having Tiger put the green jacket on you. I'm here, and what a great feeling it is. I couldn't be more excited." The Masters, postponed from April because of COVID-19 pandemic, was forced to do without patrons for the first time. Johnson still received a warm reception coming up the 18th from club members and their wives, his partner Polina Gretzky, and a few champions. Two-time champion Bubba Watson was there to congratulate him. Quote, "I've always dreamed of having one of those," Johnson said as he went to sign his card. "Now I got one." Johnson's four-shot lead was reduced to one after five holes. Then he quickly restored control. Cameron Smith and Sungjae Im each shot 69 and were the only ones who really had a chance. Smith got quite the consolation. He became the first player in Masters history to post all four rounds in the 60s, and it all got him was a silver medal. Johnson became the 12th Masters champion to never trail after any round, and his closing 68 broke another record held by Woods. It was his 11th consecutive subpar round at Augusta National. No one had a better finish than defending champion Tiger Woods, but only after the five-time Masters champion posted the highest score of his career, 3 balls in Rae's Creek for a 10 on the par 3, 12th hole. He finished with 5 birdies over the last 6 holes to salvage a 76. The betting favorite and biggest basher in golf, Bryson DeChambeau, couldn't even beat 63-year-old Bernard Hanger, who shot 71 and wound up 1 shot ahead of the U.S. Open champion. These were only sideshows on a quiet Sunday at Augusta National. Johnson, the first number one player in the world to win the Masters since Wood in 2002, was the main event. He won for the 25th time worldwide in his second major. He won the U.S. Open from 4 shots behind at Oakmont in 2016. Comes with some big perks. He can return for the rest of his life and will host the Masters Club dinner next April for champions. But even a record score and the widest margin of victory since 1997 didn't mean it was easy. This is Johnson, after all, who, for all his talent, has dealt with more than his share of misfortune, not all his own doing. He was the 16th player to take at least a 4-shot lead into the final round of the Masters, and only 4 had failed to win, most recently Rory McIlroy in 2011. That lead was down to 1 shot after 5 holes. From short of the bunker on the par 5 second, Johnson muffed his flop into the bunker and had to scramble for par at the easiest hole on the course Sunday. After he settled himself with a birdie on number 3, he came up short of the green and took 3 putts for bogey, then found a fairway bunker off the 5th tee, had to lay up, and made another bogey. Im started with 2 birdies in 3 holes and saved par with a fabulous flop over a bunker behind the 5th green. Suddenly he was 1 shot behind. Ahead of them was Smith, suddenly 2 shots behind. Just when it looked as though Johnson might be headed to a meltdown, it all changed on 1 hole. Johnson's tee shot to a pin on the top right shelf of the par 3 sixth settled 6 feet away from birdie. Im chipped from just behind the green to 3 feet and missed the par putt. Johnson's lead was back to 3. Then Johnson blocked by pine branches and having to punch low into a front bunker at number 7, Im, from the fairway, sailed the green into a bunker, blasted out through the green, and made bogey. Smith was still within 2 shots when they made the turn, and the wind was stronger than it had been all week. But the Aussie could manage only 1 birdie, and by then it was too late. Nothing is sweeter than that walk up the steep hill to the 18th green with a 5-shot lead and a green jacket waiting. Except in this case, there was no one to cheer, hardly anyone to watch. There were no roars this week. White and pink blooms of azaleas and dogwoods were replaced by golden brown hues of Augusta in autumn. It really was a Masters unlike any other, except there was no mistaking that green jacket. It's a good fit for Johnson. In Iowa football, Petras, still not satisfied with his play, filed by Steve Batterson, Minneapolis. Teammates praise the way Spencer Petras goes about his work, arrives early, stays late, meticulous in his preparation, a real student of the game. But as Iowa's first-year starting quarterback has guided the Hawkeyes from 0-2 to 2-2, Petras isn't satisfied but remains committed to mirroring the growth of his teammates. Quote, every game I'm improving, getting more comfortable, Petras said following Iowa's 35-7 victory Friday night at Minnesota. Quote, I have to keep working to eliminate the turnovers. You're going to make bad decisions, but just like our football team, we're getting better week to week, and I think I'm doing the same thing, unquote. Coach Kirk Ferentz sees the same thing. Quote, it's just the way it is. With a new quarterback, there's going to be some growing pains, Ferentz said. We all know that. And I'll remind everybody it's a new quarterback without the luxury of a spring practice, which is huge, unquote. Petras has completed 72 of 134 passes for 759 yards through four games, a 53.7% completion rate. He has thrown three touchdown passes and has been intercepted four times. In Friday's 33-degree weather at TCF Bank Stadium, Petras completed 9 of 18 passes for 111 yards. He connected on 5 of the first 6 passes he attempted. The 7th ended up in the hands of Golden Gophers John Gordon at the Hawkeye 29-yard line with 1 minute, 1 second left in the opening quarter, and Iowa clinging to a 7-0 lead. Minnesota couldn't capitalize, ending up back at its own 45-yard line after being flagged for a personal foul and an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty following Gordon's 4-yard return. The Gophers eventually punted, and Petras went back to work. He labored to regain his touch over the last two quarters. His lone completion in 9 attempts during that stretch, a 10-yard throw to Nico Reganey on a drive midway through the second quarter. To his credit, Petras did recover to help Iowa blow the game open with 21 fourth-quarter points. He connected on his final three attempts of the game, including an 8-yard touchdown pass to Emer Smith-Marset, who was open in the flat on the right side of the field when Petras hit him for the score, which extended a 14-0 lead with 13 minutes, 12 seconds to left to play. Quote, that was a good play that we had been practicing all week. We saw some things on tape that told us it might work, and Emer did a good job of executing it, Petras said. Ferentz said Petras did a good job of keeping himself in the game despite his struggles in the second and third quarters. Although pleased with the way backup Alex Padilla had been practicing, Ferentz said he never considered making a change under center. There's no question about our confidence in Spencer, and we feel the same way about Alex, Perrin said. Petras enjoyed the opportunity to follow up the first victory of his career a week earlier against Michigan State, with his first win as a starting quarterback away from Kinnick Stadium. He understands there will be more challenges ahead, beginning with next Saturday's game against a Penn State team that fell to 0-4 with a 30-23 loss at Nebraska on Saturday. Petras said the challenge begins with improved consistency in his performance. Quote, I have to try to eliminate the turnovers, Petras said. I have to be better than that. As Iowa reaches the midpoint of its 8-game regular season schedule, running back Tyler Goodson doesn't believe that will be an issue. Quote, Spencer is a great quarterback. I'm sure things are starting to slow down for him, Goodson said. It takes time. He's working at it every day, just like we all are, unquote. Center Tyler Linderbaum says Petras gaining a better command of the Iowa offense by the week. Quote, the way he leads, the way he goes about everything, he'll only keep getting better, and that is only going to be beneficial for the team, unquote. In Iowa State men's basketball, Prohm needs more out of Bolton, story filed by Ben Visser, the sports correspondent for the Courier. Ames, Rashier Bolton was a productive player for Iowa State last season. He averaged 14.7 points, 3.4 rebounds, and 2.8 assists. But Coach Steve Prohm needs more from the junior. More in the leadership department, with the departure of Tyrese Hilliburton, more on the defense side of the ball, and more as a true point guard. Quote, he has to jump into a leadership role, Prohm said. You jump into a leadership role by being an everyday guy. The guy who have been great leaders here and the guys that have really impacted this program were everyday guys. They were guys that did it right in the classroom, guys that did it right off the floor, guys that were in the gym constantly, guys that were watching film constantly, and then guides that were engaging, unquote. Bolton has examples to draw inspiration from. Last season, Hilliburton, as a sophomore, was exactly what Prom looks for. Prom, said Bolton, has been in his office a lot since they've been able to return from quarantine to watch tape and try to be that everyday guy. That might be more important than ever this year, with 7 new faces entering the mix. Quote, it definitely feels good to have that trust from your coach and having him believing in you, Bolton said. Our relationship is growing day by day. As far as a leadership role, I'm just trying to help out the young guys and the new guys too. I'm just showing them that I'm not perfect, but you have to fight and be consistent every day no matter what. If you have a bad day at practice, you have to get into the gym the next day and watch film with coach so you can continue to learn. The biggest thing is staying consistent, and even though I'm not perfect, I'm always there fighting. Defensively, the Cyclones will miss Hilliburton, who had 54 steals in 22 games. Bolton had just 32 steals in 30 games, and Prohm said he needs to take a step forward on the defensive end of the floor. Quote, the biggest challenge of taking the next step is he going to be dominant defensively, Prohm said. Can he be dominant defensively and take on the other team's best guard? If we're playing Baylor, can he say, hey, coach, I want Jared Butler or Makeob Teague? He has to want that. He has to be excited for that, and it has to drive him. He has to challenge himself on the defensive side of the floor, unquote. It's unfair to ask Bolton to be Hilliburton, who will likely be a lottery pick on Wednesday in the NBA draft, but Bolton can use Hilliburton as an example. One of the most impressive parts of Halliburton's game was his distributing. Hilliburton averaged 6.5 assists last season, and his assist-to-turnover ratio was 2.3-1. Quote, it'll definitely help a lot just having experience with playing point guard and learning from Tyrese last year and taking notes from him, Bolton said. Bolton had an assist-to-turnover ratio of 0.75-1. If Bolton is going to be the point guard, he needs to improve that number. Quote, if you're going to be an elite point guard, and we've been blessed to have several of them over the years, you have to put yourself in position to be a 3-to-1 assist-turnover ratio guy, Prohm said. That comes from making great decisions, playing off 2 feet, and making sure you find the right guy. Quote, I think he's made strides, but now it's go time, and we're full go, and he has to take the next step. In the National Football League, Cardinals top Bills on Hail Mary, filed by the Associated Press. Glendale, Arizona. Hail Murray. Kyler Murray completed a stunning 43-yard Hail Mary desperation pass to DeAndre Hopkins with 2 seconds left to lift the Arizona Cardinals to a 32-30 victory over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. The catch was as sensational as the throw. The game appeared to be lost for the Cardinals until Murray rolled out to his left as the seconds ticked off the clock. He flung the ball toward the end zone, where Hopkins was waiting with 3 Buffalo defenders draped all over him. Somehow, the 3-time All-Pro came down with the ball, and the Cardinals started a wild celebration in the end zone. Josh Allen threw a 21-yard scoring pass to Stephon Diggs with 34 seconds left that looked like it would win for the Bills, but Murray and the Cardinals ended the Bills' winning streak at 3 games. There's just enough time to read the scores of the remaining games listed here. Rams 32, Seahawks 16, Saints 27, 49ers 13, Steelers 36, Bengals 10, Buccaneers 46, Panthers 23, Browns 10, Texans 7, Dolphins 29, Chargers 21, Raiders 37, Broncos 12, Packers 24, Jaguars 20, Lions 30, Washington 27, Giants 27, Eagles 17, and lastly, Patriots 23, Ravens 17. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Monday, November 16th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading at our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And thanks so much for listening today.